Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Senate version of the so-called Trump-Ryan tax reform bill that eliminates some of the most flagrantly egregious giveaways to the ultra-rich in the name of middle-class tax cuts. Jeff Madrick, a regular contributor to the New York Review of Books, a former economics columnist for the New York Times, and the author of Seven Bad Ideas, How Mainstream Economists Have Damaged America and the World, joins us. We'll discuss the admission by the White House economics advisor, Gary Cohn, that, quote, the most excited group out there are big CEOs about our tax plan, which Cohn goes on to describe as trickle-down economics. And we'll look into the truth-telling by Republican Congressman Chris Collins, who said that his big donors are saying, quote, get it done or don't ever call me again, and Senator Lindsey Graham, who admitted to blackmail by donors, suggesting that a failure to pass tax reform would split the GOP and result in more well-financed far-right challenges to incumbent Republicans. Then we'll assess the impact of the explosive revelations in a Washington Post investigation of Steve Bannon's candidate for the U.S. Senate in Alabama, Judge Roy Moore, which documents the experiences of four women who dated Roy Moore when one of the women was 14 and the others 16, and Moore was in his 30s. Zach McCrary, who served as a pollster and strategist for members of Congress, mayors, state legislative caucuses, and public interest groups in Alabama, joins us to discuss the unusually quick response by Republican senators, including Alabama's Richard Shelby, calling on Moore to step down if the allegations are true, and the staggering hypocrisy of such an aggressively holier-than-thou Christian who stands accused of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old. Then finally, we will speak with a veteran CIA analyst and author of The Path to Dissent, A Whistleblower at CIA, Melvin Goodman, about the possibility that Trump's head of the CIA, who has proven to be a partisan hack and an ambitious toady, could sabotage the Mueller investigation by muzzling the CIA's counterintelligence unit that he has placed under his personal control and hold back evidence that Mueller may not know exists. We will examine Mike Pompeo's record of distorting evidence of Russian interference in our election to please the beneficiary of Russian hacking, his boss, Donald Trump. And joining us now, Jeff Madrick, who's a regular contributor to the New York Review of Books and a former economics columnist for the New York Times. He's the director of the Bernard L. Schwartz Rediscovering Government Initiative at the Century Foundation and editor of Challenge magazine. And his books include Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the Present. And his latest book is Seven Bad Ideas, How Mainstream Economists Have Damaged America and the World. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeff Madrick.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ian.
Well, thank you, Jeff. And what do you make of the wrangling going on in the Senate now over the so-called tax reform bill? It looks like they're knocking out some of the big giveaways to the super rich, the donor class. Obviously, the trick for Paul Ryan and the House Republicans is to satisfy the donor class and to con their own voters into believing they're actually getting a middle-class tax cut. It looks like the Senate's not buying that in total. Right. So what's your sense of what's happening?
Well, one of the things that Ryan and his pals did was attack the so-called blue states, states that actually tax their citizens. California is one of them. New York is another. These are states actually that have ample, you know, that provide ample social protections and social policies for their citizens and build, pay for infrastructure and have health plans and so forth. That was a direct attack on the blue states. The Senate has, by and large, in their proposal, disallowed what these fellows are doing. They wanted to remove the deductibility of taxes paid to state and local governments, which would hurt many of us who live in these states. The Senate said no, they have... they also said no, interestingly, to ending the estate tax, which is a big deal. and they wanted to maintain the mortgage deduction. Now, I don't think it's a bad idea to drop the mortgage deduction to $500,000 from a million, mortgages of $500,000 from a million. Many of us would be hurt because house values have gone up so much. We have big mortgages, but most people don't have mortgages nearly that size, at half a million. But I think the Senate counterproposal is in the realm of good sense. Still, the big cuts and the big benefits go to the rich.
Well, from what I understand, the Senate basically 5 to 7 brackets instead of 4 with different income thresholds than the House, double the exemption on estate tax, short of full repeal. So that means it's, what, $22 million instead of 11 for a couple. Full repeal of state and local tax deductions, 1 year phase out of the 20% corporate rate. On pass-throughs, not 70-30 or 50-50, instead they have a tax deduction construct of sorts, and the child tax credit around 1600 level from the House. So the pass-through, of course, is a massive hole in revenues, right?
Yeah, I think it would be a massive hole. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips. In general, the bill, I think there's some messing up with the 25% versus 20% and so forth tax rate on these things. I think the bill wasn't well thought out, and there's a lot of business dissension about that. But I think, aside from pass-through there, you know, I guess I think the corporate tax cut to 20% is pretty outrageous, and generally the reduction of income taxes is fairly outrageous. So I think those are the dominating issues. So is ending the estate tax, and I'm glad to see the Senate. You have more details than I, but I'm glad to see the Senate doubled that. I think it's fair to tax estates,
particularly over $22 million.
Yeah,
and that's basically
there aren't too many of us who have that much money.
Right, we're talking about the 0.1% of the 1%.
Yeah,
it's the Koch brothers.
More like 0.0001%.
Right, exactly. 1% of 1% of 1%. So again, I'm speaking with Jeff Madrick, who's a regular contributor to the New York Review of Books and a former economics columnist for the New York Times. His latest book is 7 Bad Ideas: How Mainstream Economists Have Damaged America and the World.
I'm also working on a book on child poverty in America, which is a moral scandal, but I hope we'll speak about that in the future.
Well, yes, indeed. I mean, but therein lies the disconnect, doesn't it? I mean, if you cut money from food stamps in order to remove the estate tax on the super wealthy, those are the priorities. These people in the House and to a lesser extent in the Senate, these Republicans, obviously they're just so cynical, pretending this is a middle-class tax cut. The person who actually spoke truth about it, perhaps, maybe he's sorry he did, is Gary Cohn, the White House economics advisor and former chief operating officer at Goldman Sachs. In an interview on CNBC, he said the most excited group out there about this tax reform package are the big CEOs.
Right.
And he also went on to describe it as trickle-down economics. If you give the rich big corporations and the rich guys tax breaks, somehow it's going to trickle down to regular folk.
Well, I think, Ian, let me just say this. The big issue that your listeners should keep in mind is that the Republicans are claiming this is going to stimulate rapid economic growth, much more rapid than the rate under Obama, or even more rapid than the 3%. Some of them are extremely irresponsibly talking about 4 or 5% economic growth each year. It just is not going to happen. It never happened with a tax cut. Some tax cuts in our history were stimulative, like the Kennedy tax cut, and to some degree the Reagan tax cut. Both of those came with significantly higher unemployment rates than we have now, which means those economies were underperforming by a lot. And excess demand, which a tax cut can create, helps those economies along. Even if we did have an economy with a very high unemployment rate, tax cuts are not the best way to get demand. New social policies, and especially public investment in infrastructure, I think in poor children and in education, are the ways to really set this economy right again. And I don't know if Congress has it in them to do it. This president certainly doesn't have it in him.
Well, Representative Chris Collins, a Republican of New York, said, "My donors are basically saying, get it done or don't ever call me again."
Yeah,
and there's the proofs in the pudding that this is all being pushed by the Koch brothers and these other billionaires. But what I find extraordinary about that, Jeff Madrick, is we're just learning from the Paradise Papers that some of the richest Americans, including Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, have all of these offshore tax havens where they're hiding their money. And in doing so, they're making taxes more expensive for the rest of us. So
yeah, well, Mercer, too, remember,
yeah,
the big funder of Breitbart.
Right, yeah.
Is in the Paradise Papers.
Right, so here are these people getting their political agents, their hirelings, to cut their taxes. At the same time, they're hiding their money offshore so they don't have to pay tax. And all
anyway.
Of this, all of yeah, exactly. And this, all of this increases the burden on average folks. So how do you get that message across? I mean, I wish the Democrats were better at explaining. I mean, Bernie Sanders is, but
yeah,
he's just one.
Well, Democrats have some rich donors also. A lot of rich donors to the Democratic presidential campaign last time around. But it's nothing like the donors to the Republican Party, who seem often to be shameless. Maybe the Paradise Papers reporting will get that message across, but I tend to read the New York Times and the Washington Post here on the East Coast, and they are not explaining this Paradise Papers project very well because it is a tax dodge. They put that down around the 15th paragraph, I find. Now, maybe I've missed some stories. But this is basically a tax dodge. It's not to protect their money from the gnawing masses. It's to avoid paying taxes. I think that's getting out there. I hope the Tuesday elections are a suggestion that people aren't buying into the Trump idea and the Trump oligarchy the way they once did. But it's been distressing to people like you and me for a long time, Ian, because this domination of politics by the wealthy gets worse by the year. It was not always this bad. A quick story about John Kenneth Galbraith, who I had as a professor. I went to see him many years ago, several times as a journalist, and just to say hello. And I asked him, do you think the pendulum will swing back? This was maybe 15 years ago. Because Arthur Schlesinger and his father, a prominent historian, both believed that the pendulum swings in America from left to right and back from right to left. And Galbraith said, no, it wasn't at all obvious it would swing back because of the domination of money. So people have to be very well aware of that, and I think choose their voting as well in their resistance and their political campaigning for people who understand those issues, want to suppress that influence and do the right thing, which I think is ever more obvious in America because doing the right thing has been neglected for so long.
Well, there's something else that seems more sinister in this, Jeff Madrick, and you mentioned Mercer, the funder of Breitbart and of Stephen Bannon, and he's put up money they obviously forced Jeff Flake out of running for re-election for the Senate in Arizona, and they're intimidating other incumbent Republicans who are not far enough to the right in their opinion. Lindsey Graham said today that basically a failure to pass tax reform would fracture the Republican Party and lead to more far-right primary challenges. And he basically said, you know, quoting him, the financial contributions will stop. So what's clearly happening here is that these bilious billionaires are basically blackmailing the Republican senators by saying, if you don't give us our tax cuts, we will fund these crackpots, Tea Party types that Bannon is running, like Roy Moore.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue with you there, Ian, but the best place to fight that is the ballot box. I don't know why Jeff Flake dropped out. Maybe given yesterday's election, he would have had more of a chance. I do know why he dropped out, but I don't think it was for very good reasons. He should have stayed and fought. I think the only thing you can do is fight it. If we can't develop campaign laws that are actually truly effective, we have to vote against the people who are financed by extremely, extremely wealthy donors. Maybe some investigations of these people will help as well. Carl Icahn is being investigated in his relationship with Trump for getting an environmental regulation loosened. I don't say this with any joy, but there is a sexual charge against him that's just been filed. I'm not rooting for that as a path to better democracy, but it is something. People should stand up and be counted on those matters. And Ian, I don't want to sound quite as pessimistic as you are. I don't think it's inevitable that we will be taken over by the oligarchy, further taken over by the oligarchy. We already are, but I think we know about the neglect and the discrepancies and the inequalities in America. We have the highest child poverty rate in the world, which concerns me because of this book I'm writing. But that also affects all of us, because we lose a large part of the population as good workers. But those kids are in pain. Until we start understanding that, we're in trouble. Now, can I just say this as well? In some sense, while Bill Clinton did some decent things, he also began the decline of social sensitivity with his welfare reform and the failure to regulate derivatives and so forth that Larry Summers favored. And one other thing, public investment. When we had budget surpluses in the 1990s, we didn't put them back into public investment. We put them into paying down the deficit, because he had a Treasury Department that thought that was all that mattered, getting interest rates down. It led to a momentary boom and then a collapse and then a modest economic advance that led to the subprime mortgage crisis. That's another thing, Ian. I hope I'm not rambling, but George Bush's tax cuts did not lead to a charge of jobs in his 8 years. I see Republicans say that sometimes. And the TV press, of course, doesn't know everything, and sometimes they know a lot less than everything. But in George Bush's 2 terms, job creation was the slowest of any 8 years since World War II. Tax cuts didn't work in that period.
Well, just in closing, you recall Mitt Romney talking about the makers and takers in that secret video that exposed how he really thinks and how Republican donors, since he was talking to a group of them, think that 47% of the country are basically freeloaders, talking about working Americans. The truth of the matter is it's the other way around. That
exactly.
The 47% or the 50, whatever, the working Americans are the ones that are the makers. They work incredibly hard. They haven't had a raise in 40 years, for God's sake, and they work very hard and produce a lot. And the takers are the Koch brothers and Mercers. Mercer made all of his money out of hedge funding, micro, high-speed trading, just extracting wealth, not creating wealth. So this is the situation we have. But I'm not pessimistic in the sense that if we had a champion that could explain what's really going on in ways. Trump is actually pretty good at explaining stuff, albeit simplistically, to his people. He engages them in a conversation. Our politicians, most of them, talk like politicians. But if Bernie was an exception, and we found out that a huge number of Americans understand exactly what he's saying. You know, it's not news to them that they're getting hosed. So where, you know, my sense is that it's just a question of getting somebody out there to articulate what everybody knows in their bones is going on, but they don't trust the messenger so far on the left.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we have candidates, but we never know that we have capable candidates until we have them. So I agree with you. I hope somebody stands up. I think you make a really good point. The makers and takers are totally, it's exactly the opposite. And the financial community has been taking from America and creating artificial profits and diverting investment from where it's needed and putting pressure on wages. You know, I'm supporting at my foundation a high-wage America program, which I wish the Democrats would adopt. I wish they would adopt just that title, High Wage America again. And we can do that. But do we need a leader? I guess we need a leader. In my own work, though, I can't wait to depend on a leader. I just have to write the programs and the documents and the pieces I write that I think will make a better America, a decent place again. It is not really a decent place now. And people live in a myth about our glorious past. It's past. We've got to remake it.
Well, Jeff Madrick, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's always good to talk to you, Ian. It's been a long time. Take care.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Jeff Madrick, who's a regular contributor to the New York Review of Books and a former economics columnist for the New York Times. He's director of the Bernadette L. Schwartz Rediscovering Government Initiative at the Century Foundation, editor of Challenge Magazine, and his books include Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the Present. And his latest book is Seven Bad Ideas, How Mainstream Economists Have Damaged America and the World. We're going to take a brief station break and back, assessing the impact of the explosive revelations in a Washington Post investigation of Judge Roy Moore, who's running for the Senate in Alabama, who is a devout Christian but stands accused of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old.